This is NoBS Job Search Advice Radio, episode 2221. I'm Jeff Alton, the Big Game Hunter, and welcome. Today I have an interview for you that I did with Sam Tiara. And Sam is someone, he works at the university level and helps students land in new roles. He's not a career counselor in that office at a university. He's just someone who's helped so many people find work. It's a very insightful interview. Hope you find this helpful and give it an honest review wherever you listen to the show. And we'll be back in just one moment. Support for today's show comes from Skillshare.com. Now, Skillshare is a site where they have thousands of courses and lots of course instructors to help you not just simply professionally, but personally as well. I know I have a number of my classes there, and it's one price per month, and it's unlimited access to content. And they give you a 7-day free trial, so you can take all my classes that way. And if you decide not to renew, okay, you decided not to renew, I'm fine with that. But I'm just simply saying it's a place where you can learn and grow and not have to worry about spending hundreds of dollars for courses like so many instructors make you do. Again, use the link in the show notes, get a 7-day free trial. It will make a difference in your job search and so much more. And we'll be back in just one moment. Let me turn that off. Sam, great. So I'll do a quick countdown just to create a little blank space. And let's have some fun. And I'll be a little dramatic at the beginning, which I don't know if again, because I don't have my notes. I'm a little exuberant to start off with.
No worries.
Thank you. So with that, it's so my guest today is Sam Tiara. Sam, why don't you introduce yourself, tell everyone about yourself.
Sure. Hey, Jeff, there are five things that are guiding and directing me in life that has actually helped me tremendously in life and career search. The five things are servant leadership, story sharing, activator igniter, champion enabler, and community do-gooder. As a result, that's made me a speaker and a storyteller, educator, author, writer, mentor and coach to many, but also a problem solver. These aspects has really helped me so that I can help individuals in their search for the true path that they would like to go on.
And folks, we're going to spend some time talking to those of you who are not our age, you know, like a little bit younger, shall we say, about landing in a job, what it's like to look for a job. And Sam, you know, there's a lot that school teaches and there's a lot that school doesn't teach.
Right.
Should we talk about some of the things that school isn't teaching that's helpful for students in landing that new role?
Totally. I mean, whether it's high school or post-secondary, I think people go into a runway and a pathway. And universities and colleges or even high schools provide, I guess, some tools with regards to knowledge. But where knowledge will only take you so far, it's the application of the knowledge that becomes wisdom. And that's where, you know, career centers or different programs try to provide students the capacities and capabilities. But sometimes in some institutions, it's a numbers piece. You could have 17,000 students and only two career advisors. So how much can you really support that journey of the individual who's looking for career advice or support? It's really difficult. And, you know, many of the times as we go through the university piece, it's almost like you're preparing to take off. And then all of a sudden that runway, when you graduate, you're like, okay, see you later, but where am I going? Where do I start? What's the opportunities that are there? There's a need for us to start building more of the practical experiences and getting more of the insights from professionals who have actually blazed the trail in the past and being able to share their journeys or capturing the essence of these.
And I'm going to speak to the parents who may be watching this.
Sure.
Who want to work over their son or daughter.
Yes.
About this. most of your students are waiting too late to engage.
Yeah.
They're waiting until senior year and maybe the upper senior year and say, hey, I got to find a job after graduation, where there's so much that can be done before then totally. That will help them land. So totally. If you're watching this as the parent of a freshman, sophomore, or junior, fabulous.
Yeah.
This is really the time to start working them over and saying to them, you know, I know what your friends are telling you, but they know as little as you do. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I hate to say it, but also it's friends and family that also sometimes may be misguiding individuals because they want the students to go down their pathway that they think is a safe or that this is a viable option. And you're almost spoon feeding them something they're not going to enjoy, and at a certain point later in life, they were like, okay, now I have to switch careers because this really doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I never want to encourage people to force a career on their kid.
Oh, yeah.
But once the student is thinking about a career, mm-hmm. what can they do? Should they wait till senior year? I don't think so.
No. And in fact, it's almost like what I would say is step outside of the classroom. And you'll find that it doesn't matter what campus you're on, there are clubs that are in place on so many different fronts. So for example, if you're interested in accounting, there's an accounting club in your school where you can actually join people and, you know, they'll do industry tours, they'll bring guest speakers in. Hey, this allows you the opportunity to say, okay, this really resonates or this doesn't resonate. So club activities are really important. And the importance of joining a club, twofold. Number one, you get to learn about the jobs or the careers that are available. But the second most important thing is you start building those integral networks or relationships with people who are in industry. So you're doing a dual purpose and building your own confidence with regards to interacting and engaging with people as well.
Are you saying that they should network while they're in school?
Relationship building. Networking, I find, is transactional. No, bad word. I find it's relationship building. Networking, and we use it in our daily language. Oh, go to this networking session. And, you know, I would say build the relationships. And I get, and it's so funny because I've spent so many years in this industry. And you get to an event and you see these young people running around collecting business cards. And it's like, okay, but did you really meet that person? And they're mm-hmm. walking around going like, oh, look at the stack of cards I have. Well, yeah, but at the end of the evening, is it better to have one meaningful conversation with an individual for 15, 20 minutes or 25 business cards? You know what? Go with that individual who's going to try to remember you, or you have to reconnect with them and start building those foundational relationships at that event. But it's also like, you know, a lot of these clubs put on such events so that you can actually go and meet people. And Jeff, I'll tell you, again, I get people coming to my office at the university. I have to go to this event. Sam, how do I engage in a conversation? I was like, I don't know. I just talk to people, but there's a lot of anxiety on, well, what do I say? They think that you have to go to this event. And if I meet Jeff, I have to have this killer question prepared that Jeff's going to be like, oh my gosh. Okay. Give me a resume. I've got a job for you right here. That doesn't happen. I always tell my students, when you get to an event, ask a simple question and listen and observe. And I always say, look, Jeff, if I came to your house and I knocked on the door and I'm coming for dinner with a bottle of wine, is the first question when you open the door, Sam, I just wanted to know, what is the trends of youth markets and jobs that are aggressive or assertive that you know my students can actually get into? Or are you going to say, Sam, come on in. How was your flight from Vancouver? And the funny part is, you know, the students are trying to find this singular question that's going to wow people. I said, ask a simple question. Jeff, what school did you go to? And then, you know, did you come to, like, I teach at Simon Fraser University. Simple question. if Jeff shows up at an SFU event, it'd be like, Jeff, are you an alum of Simon Fraser University? And then you'd be like, no, actually, I went to school over here. And I was like, oh, great. What was that experience like? Oh, my gosh. Now Jeff is going to talk to them about his experience at post-secondary. And then when Jeff's talking about his experience in post-secondary, I would be able to say, oh, man, I can so relate to that. Like, but and here's how things haven't changed, or, you know, here's how things have changed. Make it into a conversation.
And what's funny, folks, and this is something I've said to people for years, the more they talk, the more they like you.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No,
being
no.
Giving the appearance of being an acute listener is one of the great skills to develop. Number one is you don't reveal your ignorance.
Yeah.
Number two is you might actually learn something. And number three is you're going to actually connect, because they transfer those warm feelings that they start to have as they talk about themselves and associate them with you.
Totally. And once you build this strong foundational relationship, what happens, though, is I get people, again, coming up later, 4 months later. Oh, Sam, I was at this networking event. I said, which event? And they said, I mean, relationship building event. And they said, I never followed up with that person. It's been 4 months. And I was like, drop them a note. And they're like, but isn't that awkward? I said, no, just say, you know, Jeff, I was just going through and, you know, I really enjoyed my conversation with you. I said, what's the worst that's going to happen? Is Jeff going to come and kill you? No. Jeff may respond back and say, oh, hey, it's great to hear from you. And if he just ignores it, well, hey, I mean, chalk it up to an experience and then don't do that next time. I've got people I haven't talked to in 10 years, but because we built a foundational relationship, hey, well, all of a sudden, we're picking up where we left off. In fact, after this call, I'm having a conversation with this friend of mine. Well, again, we haven't talked in about maybe 20 years.
And notice, by the way, he referred to this person as a friend, despite not having spoken with him for 20 years.
And here's the thing. I spoke on a podcast, and all of a sudden she was connected to somebody who does this podcast. And she was like, oh my gosh, the two people that I know, and I hadn't talked to her in 20 years. And all of a sudden now I'm meeting her for coffee just after this call to just catch up. And I was like, oh, wait, you were the mayor's executive assistant. And she was like, oh my gosh, you remember. And I was like, well, no, I still remember you. And she was just so pleased. But 20 years has gone by. Is it awkward? Of course not. In fact, it's just an opportunity to reignite and reconnect. And don't be afraid to do that.
And folks, if you're a student and you're watching this or listening to it, remember, there are students that you went to school with who've already graduated. Mm-hmm. And you can always drop them a note that says something to the effect of, God, it feels like it's been 100 years since we spoke or we sat in that class together. And then you can make a joke about something that happened there. And your name just came into my mind. I thought I would try reaching out and seeing
it. And Jeff, the way you just said that, your name came into my mind. It all of a sudden, it just sparks that reconnection, because it's like, oh, they were thinking of me. And, you know, and the longer the time's gone and all of a sudden somebody says, you know, I was thinking of you today. And yeah, it's been too long since we connected or that we've had a conversation. And all of a sudden they feel really great that you've remembered them, you know.
And one of the fun times of year is Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, Christmas, everyone's in a good mood. They're starting to wind down. Yeah. Emotionally, the year has come to an end. And that same note at that time of year is so well received, or just after the first of the year.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing. You have until from the US Thanksgiving until, let's say, the 10th of January, where you can send that note. And obviously, you can do it at any time of the year.
Of course.
Those are particularly wonderfully charged times of year where people's guard is down a little bit and they're more receptive to those kind of reconnections.
Totally. Yeah. No, and there's, apart from the clubs, as we've gone in that pathway, another thing I highly recommend students to do is what we call co-op. And I'm not sure if you have that in the States. Co-op, so our universities here, they have pre-assigned work terms. And, you know, there's a huge slew of them from all faculties. And the students apply for it. So rather than the individual student going out to seek work while they're a student, and you're one of 1,000 resumes, you might be one of 15 resumes because these are pre-assigned work terms. So they could be with accounting firms. It could be a lab assistant. It could be a marketing intern. But these are all paid. But here's the thing. You wind up getting 4 months to 8 months of work experience in a company, but you get to test drive the career and you get to see, is this what I like or don't like? And here's the kicker in this, Jeff. 80% of the co-op employers wind up hiring the students because they've seen you work. What reference check do I need when I've seen you right there in the office doing this? So if your university or college has what we call co-op or
interns in the United States.
Perfect. So these are pre-assigned job terms that your we call a co-op, but your co-op office has. And, you know, you go into the database and there's literally hundreds jobs of jobs that are available to our students in co-op. So employers, the benefit of this is oftentimes they're alumni of the institution. And now they've gone into industry. So SAP, KPMG, any number of these organizations will source out people in universities and colleges to these work terms. And they understand that they're doing a service to the community because, well, a couple of benefits here is you're getting someone who can do a certain amount of tasks, you know, that you need done. And you're paying them wages, but they're going towards their education and that you're doing a positive thing. But you're also getting to know these people, and now you're able to bring them into your organization at a later date or time if you choose to. So it's a really great opportunity to do these co-op opportunities or these internships because you get to test drive your career if you like it or don't like it.
You know, when I did my master's in social work, it was 2 years of such programs. So the first year I worked in one type of agency, the second year I worked in another type. It gave me a sense of what the field was like. And it was very useful to me because I got a practical application of what was covered in the classroom.
Right. Yeah. No, and another area that I've spent a lot of time in is mentorship. It's been about 5,000 conversations to date with these young people, either building out a mentorship program or just being a mentor to these individuals. And it's interesting because I always see mentorship programs to some extent as awkward dating, because what you're doing is you're pulling an employer and a person and you're matching them up and saying, there you go. And it almost looks like square dance in primary school. You're like, okay, everyone's on this side and everyone's on this side. I work with mentorship programs to try to build, how do you make it a successful mentorship program so that both parties walk away with benefits with regards to something that both have gained? And I mean, having mentored so many people, Jeff, I mean, I've gained so much experience and exposure. I've built tremendous relationships over the years. And the mentorship piece is also valuable because now you're sharing with them insights on the types of careers that are out there and connecting them to people that you've already built relationships with. And, you know, but I also find what's interesting is mentorship programs. I mean, I've been mentoring in one program for about 21 years now. They don't even ask me if I want to mentor this year. They just give me somebody. That's how it's become. But it's interesting because my background is education, coaching, writing, sort of the social side and the soft skills side. And they've given me finance students who are very focused and direct and numbers. And the finance person actually has gone back to the organizers. I think there's a mistake here. I was looking for somebody in finance and you gave me somebody who's like
touchy-feely.
Yoga. He's a yoga guy. And they're like, no, trust me on this. The one key thing I will tell people about mentorship is, well, there's a few things, but is if you're given somebody and assigned somebody who has nothing to do with your industry or the area you think you want to go, embrace it, because you are going to learn a part of your life they're going to expose that you may not even know exists. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to, I'm not out there to shift them from finance into coaching. But what I'm going to do is give them a different perspective. And it's also funny because they think that mentorship is like you're dating. And all of a sudden, hey, if you were to go find another mentor, what's that first mentor going to say? And I'm like, we don't care. I mean, if you want to finance, I'll put you in touch with a banker or somebody in the finance industry, and I'll guide you in this area, you know. So in these, so it's about the, you know, we talked about co-op, we talked about club or co-op and internships and club activities, and universities, colleges, and outside of it have these mentorship programs that I highly recommend people get into.
And I'm going to pause here and ask a question of you.
Yeah.
So there are organizations that assign a mentor to someone. Yeah. The classic example is you go to work for an organization, yeah, you're the junior person or the intern, and they assign a mentor to you who's 37 levels up from where you are, right, and you're supposed to bask in their magnificence. And their thing is, oh God, I got to do this. Okay, this is the way I get ahead, is by mentoring a kid somewhere along the line to show I've got emotional intelligence and soften me a little bit.
Right.
Okay, so we got that kind of a program. And there's a way to make that program work, yeah, if you're the student in the equation.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you can suggest to a student in that situation,
right,
how they wind up profiting, benefiting, yeah, from that kind of a setup. And then I've got a few more scenarios.
No, and Jeff, it's true. I mean, having been in industry for so long, I've got this white robe that I wear when I go into the mentorship program.
Really?
Yeah, of course, you have to.
How much is the dry cleaning bill?
Because you really want that effect of, no, and I the benefit with regards to the university mentorship programs is oftentimes they reach out to alums. And I think the people who come into those programs at the university level really want to be there. But there's a problem with that as well. Because if they've been in industry 5 years, 10 years, they're like, yes, now instead of the white robe, oh no, we're going to put on the Indiana Jones hat. I am going to maneuver you and show you the ropes, and I'm going to get you through this, and with flames going here and rocks that are falling when you step on the wrong one and stuff. I've had situations where mentors, not mentees, have come up to me going like, this was a mentor fail. I said, why, what happened? They said, I've been in the finance industry for 8 years and, you know, have progressed along. I was, you know, going to take my mentee and introduce them to some of these partners and get them a job. But Sam, I'm sorry, but the guy they gave me had very basic knowledge of finance. And it was just literally, we had a few conversations, but it was a mentorship fail. I said, okay, did you go into this relationship to save a soul? Or did you go in there to listen to what this person's needs were? And he was like,
we know what it was. It was the first, of course.
Of course. And I said, because did you actually listen to what the mentee was sort of saying that they needed, or is the support or learning, what was important to them? And he was like, okay, I get it. I was imposing when I should have been maybe listening. So it's two ways. But to the part that you were also saying about, you know, you've got somebody up here and, you know, you're down here. Number one is, what's the interest level of this person to be in this relationship? You know, because, oh my gosh, I've got CEOs that are just like, man, this is the part of my job I really love, where I can bring people in and I can engage them. And, you know, but they're also open to say, but I also learn from them. But the person who's coming in at this level, you know, I would say, you know, come in with interest, come in curious, and come in wanting to learn. And next thing you know, your mentor is impressed by you. because now they're seeing, you know, this initiative that you have. And, you know, I always say, learn about your mentor. Now, don't stalk them, but learn about your mentor. Because if you can learn about them, and, you know, the more that they you learn about your mentor, the more you're going to have that relationship established. And they're going to be very happy to have you in their presence. And they may even take you to these business lunches and places to say, okay, you know, we're having a board meeting. Why don't you grab a chair and just have a look and see how we talk about these aspects and things like that. But for the student, go in with this curiosity, go in looking for an opportunity to learn from this person. And I always say at the same time, once that mentorship relationship, let's say in a program, is over, you have a choice. Both parties can say, you know what, it's been great, thank you so much, and good luck in your job search or good luck in your career. Or you carry on the relationship. And that's what I've done over the last 25 years. You carry on these relationships and, you know, see where they go in life. So these are some things that we could say.
And thus, for you as a student, I know you don't want to look stupid. Just, it's a natural thing. I think back to when I was a student, back in the Stone Ages when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
And we used the tablets with the chisels.
It was that kind of a tablet. It wasn't digital.
Right.
And thus, you don't want to look dumb, but your job is to learn. And yes, they don't know what it is they're supposed to communicate with you. Yes, that's going to help you. So if you want generic, keep your mouth shut. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be as useful to you as if you ask questions of curiosity. Even if you premise it by saying, I know this may be baby stuff to you, mm-hmm, but, and then go ask your question.
Yeah.
Because the more you do that, the more you're going to get from the relationship that's going to solve your questions, concerns, and foster trust from the mentor so that, yes, they're more willing to do stuff to help you because, yeah, they know that you care.
Yeah. And Jeff, the other part is, I mean, there's not like a mentorship store where you can walk in and say, yeah, I'll take that one or I'll take this one. So how do you build these relationships or find these mentors? And part of it is, you know, like I said, through these mentorship programs that are available. But the other part is, you know, the alums that are in your, you know, from your university or college, reach out to them on LinkedIn and, say, you know, and I always tell people, I mean, I get anywhere from 1 to 5 LinkedIn requests per day. And majority of them are the generic, hi, Sam, can we connect? The generic message that LinkedIn sends. I'm always impressed by that one person who sends a note to say, you know, I really appreciate the space you've created or the work that you're doing. And, you know, as a university student, I think I could really learn a lot from you about this area of whatever. I hope that we can connect. Automatically, that note appears. I will go in and I will reply with a message and I will connect with them. And I always tell people to use LinkedIn as a tool because, again, there's things that are beneficial here because if you're not sure about a career, like what, you know, I get people saying, after they finish my class, because I teach organizational behavior, it's like an entry-level human resources course. I do get students coming up afterwards going like, oh my gosh, I want to get into human resources because, oh my gosh, I love people. And I'm like, well, if you love people, don't do HR. That's not what it is, you know? And then my accountants will be like, wait, you love people? You got to get into accounting. And they're like, I'm confused. Isn't that numbers that people are sitting in the back room? They're like, no, we build client relationships. We deal with people. The numbers is just the hard fact. But by going into LinkedIn, you actually learn about people's jobs. And, you know, I've had people reach out from globally. But I'll give one quick story about this one individual and how this is a relationship that emerged. Because again, a note popped into my feed on LinkedIn, and it was a thoughtful note that just said, I moved here, and, you know, I don't know a lot of people, but I saw your profile. I'm trying to find people in Vancouver that would be interesting to have a conversation with or build a connection with, and I hope we can connect. And, I mean, I checked his profile. He wasn't an axe murderer. looked, you know, like a really nice person. And I thought, perfect, connected. Within 30 minutes, a note popped in again saying, I really appreciate you accepting my connection request. And I know you're really busy. If you ever happen to be downtown at your convenience, let me know if you have 30 minutes available and I'll meet you downtown. And, you know, if you're open for a cup of coffee. And I checked my calendar and I said, look, I happen to be downtown on this particular date. Would 11 o'clock work? Yes, that's perfect. So I met this fellow. And in that conversation, he just was like, I'm so thankful that you took the time. And then he described who he was. I described who I was. And we, you know, basically carried this relationship forward. Do you know what? He wound up becoming the general manager of an incubator. He got to know so many people in Vancouver. But here's the thing, anytime I've asked him, you know, oh, I need you to, you know, I'm looking for speakers. He's like, Sam, I will, as long as if my calendar's not full, he says, I will come and speak. He introduces me to people. He says, I should connect you to this person. And all of this emerged just because he sent a thoughtful note on LinkedIn. And we all have that capacity. It goes a long way to build those foundational relationships. And I tell my students, if you do send a note out and somebody responds back, now the ball's in your court. And make sure you respond back again and thank them for connecting. And now see where this conversation can go.
It's so funny. People forget that every interaction mm-hmm. has a meaning.
Yep.
And so many of, excuse me, so many people conduct themselves as though they're transactions.
Yep.
It's a wonderful story I read earlier in the day as I look for different stories to inspire myself and others. And there's a classic story of a carpenter who decided to retire. Mm-hmm. Tells his boss, you know, I'm toast. I've had enough. I've done this for a long time. It's time for me to step away. My interest has waned. Mm-hmm. And his boss says, could you do one more house? Guy nods and goes, okay, I'll do it. And he starts working on the house. And doesn't do his best work, buys inferior materials, cuts corners. It's not perfect as most of his other work had been.
Yep.
And then he tells his boss he's done. And boss comes to him and hands him a set of keys and said, this one's for you.
Yep.
And he suddenly goes, I wish I knew this before.
Yep.
And you never have a chance to do it over again.
No. You don't. And that's a beautiful story, but there's so much purpose and meaning in it. In that yes. I'm speaking at a workshop on Thursday on relationship building and personal branding. And one of the things I say is this your 1,000th customer or your first? You've got to treat everybody like this is your first customer, because 1,000, just as you said, is transactional. And being transformational, Jeff, doesn't have to be epic. I mean, I'll just relay a quick story about transformation. I mean, I had about 20 of my students in Toronto. We were at an event. It's 10 o'clock at night. It's late. And we're all hungry. There happened to be a Chipotle's. And all 21 of us walked in. And the lady behind the counter did the typical thing. What would you like? And she pointed to the menu and in front of her. And I looked at her and I said, and her name tag said, Mary. I said, oh, Mary. She goes, yes. I said, how long have you worked here? She goes, 3 years. I said, Mary, I eat everything. Why don't you make me what Mary's favorite is? And she was smiled and she said, are you kidding? And I said, no, make me what you like. And all of a sudden she pulls this tortilla shell. She's got a smile on her face and she turns to me and she says, but would you like black beans or brown beans? And I said, what does Mary use? And she said, well, I like black beans. I said, Mary, give me black beans and don't ask me again, or I'm coming around the counter and making my own. And she started smiling and now it became a laugh. Anyway, she's now going along. My students are smiling and laughing. Mary's smiling and laughing. And she yells to the cashier, I'm comping this guy's guacamole. Because I would have put that in mind, but I'm not charging him because this is like he's saying this is what I'm having. And next thing you know, the cashier starts smiling. And Mary is stuffing this burrito like no end. And at the end of it, she can't close the burrito. There's so much stuff in it. And now the cashier says, wait, let me try. And the cashier comes to start trying to close his burrito. And the manager's in the back and he's smiling like
this. Yeah, hammer and nail, yeah.
And now the manager comes and he says, here, step aside, let me try. And the best part is my students are laughing. The staff are laughing. And I just said, Mary, give me a fork and give me this in an open face and I'm just going to attack it this way. But it's what she said at the end. She said, oh man, thanks so much. That was so much fun. So transformation, I mean, am I now Mary's best friend? Of course not. But you know what? We had fun in that little instance and we remember this. And my students still remember it even though they've graduated. But the idea is we have these opportunities to have what we call these transformational micro experiences. And even as a student, have these micro experiences. And it's also interesting because I use this as a story in my class to remind people, they think that you have to go for epic. No, it's those little things people are noticing. And I had a group of students that went down to Washington State for an academic competition. And there was about 100 people there. And they got invited to the offices of JP Morgan. Here you got senior executives of JP Morgan and 100 students and coaches and volunteers. At the end of it all, everyone said their thank yous and left. My coach came back and he basically found the senior most person in the room and they start talking. But what he noticed is the senior most person is picking up the teacups and saucers and putting it on the sideboard while they're talking. And my coach said, they've got people to clean up here. And he said, yeah, they do. But he said, I would never leave these on the table at home. Why would I leave someone else to clean up after me? But he said, more importantly, I had a room of bright, intelligent, articulate people. If one of them would have picked up their cup and saucer and moved it to the sideboard, I'm watching. That's the student I want to talk to. And I always tell my students, that means what you don't do after I tell you the story is get to an event, pick up your cup and saucer, walk it to the sideboard and said, look, I'm looking for a job. I'm moving my cup and saucer. I hope people are watching. My resume just dropped on the floor. I can't pick it up because I'm holding the cup and saucer. Jeff, it just goes back to this piece of be genuine, be authentic. And, you know, don't go in with this expectation of what am I going to get out of this person or get out of this situation. People are watching what you're doing, and you would be amazed at what they're picking up about you.
What you're doing and not doing.
Yes. Yeah.
Sam, this is wonderful. And I know we could go on for another hour, but you've got to meet someone in a little while. How can people find out more about you and the work that you do?
Sure. LinkedIn, obviously. So all they have to do is type in my name, but there's two Sam Theoris. Find the one in Vancouver, not the one in England, although I'm connected to him now. So that's one way. And my website. So if you just see my name, it's just put a dash between my name, sam-theora.com.
Could you spell your last name for them?
Sure. So it's www.sam-theora, thiaara.com. And people can find me there. And yeah, LinkedIn or my website are two places where I spend a lot of time speaking at colleges and universities or building out this nonprofit. Anything and everything, it's about to help that audience maneuver, move forward with more confidence.
And be more successful, happy, etc. Sam, this is... So that's today's show. I hope you found it helpful. And if you did, here are a few things I can do to help you with your job search beyond simply being your coach. First of all, I've got a new book out called The Right Answers to Tough Interview Questions. It is like a cookbook with answers to tons of interview questions that you're going to be asked on interviews. And if you pair it up with my other new book, The Ultimate Job Interview Framework, they are a terrific pair of books to help you with interviewing. In addition, a new service where you can practice mock interviews. If you go to thebiggamehunter.us /mock. I've got a service there, very inexpensive, like $99, where we have mock interviews set up. I'm going to be adding more to it very soon, but you can record your answers to them, and then I can critique them and help you perform better on them. You probably have noticed my show notes are pretty thorough with products and services that can help you with your search. And connect with me on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/IN/TheBigGameHunter. Lastly, my website has a ton of great information. That's thebiggamehunter.us. Now, if you're not ready to go there and go through the blog, put the address in your phone, thebiggamehunter.us, Jeff Altman. So this way, when you're ready to go, you have a way of getting back to my website. Hope you have a terrific day, and most importantly, be great!